We're starting the show in a different way this morning, not with a debate, but a personal story. Paul Martin has been broadcasting with me for, I guess, the guts of 20 years. Larger-than-life character, showbiz commentator. But this morning, he's here to talk about something very, very personal, his cancer battle, and he's with me now. Paul, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, when did you find out?
I found out on Thursday, and it all actually happened really quickly, actually, because one thing I will say, Stephen, is, you know, the NHS is much maligned, as we all know, and it gets, you know, people always criticise it, waiting times and all this kind of stuff, and I've been one of those people, but it all happened really, really quickly. They kind of picked up on this very, very fast, and without any prompting from me, really, to be honest. I've been in the hospital for a few days, and because they wanted to check out a shadow on the lung, which they thought was sort of going to be fine anyway, kind of routine tests. And they were like, within 2 days, I was at the city hospital, and like in this kind of like, what I can only describe as like some kind of like, it's like the Starship Enterprise of cancer. You know, you go in there and there's every kind of department, every single charity is operating at hasty speed in these places and reaching out to people. And I kind of waited around for a bit, and then came in. And I thought, oh, this isn't going to be anything bad. And then you kind of sit.
And had you had many, Paul? Had you had many symptoms up until then?
No, absolutely not, Stephen. Absolutely not. As I said, I had been in hospital for a few days. I mean, the day before I went into the city hospital and got this official, let's put it in inverted commas, official diagnosis. The day before, I had been in the gym. Pushing weights, being out running. Like, if you asked me to go out and run 10 miles now, I could do it. I was speaking to you a couple of days before it, and as you know, I was my usual annoyingly boisterous and bouncy self. It's not something you expect when you're 41 and you have three young kids. You just don't expect it. And the incredible thing, actually, that I will say, I've spent most of the weekend sort of...
And when did you get the diagnosis, Paul? How recently?
Well, on Thursday, they said, look, this is the deal. They still don't know what the plan is.
Last Thursday?
Yeah.
As recent as that?
Yeah. So I came home, I drove home, and my kids had been dropped off for a visit, and I literally had, you know, I was having a night with the kids, and they were about to burst through the door. These little absolute superstars of my life were about to burst through the door. And I literally came in to, you know, and I was like, I've got 15 minutes to pull myself together here and work out a game plan. What do you do? Am I going to not say anything to them? Am I going to tell them everything? How do I do it? Because, you know, children are so individual. You know, little Sonny is young and the whole world sort of passes him by. It's just a great ball of fun. And then James, my oldest son, who's nearly 14, he's very sensitive, but obviously understands a lot more than Sonny, who's eight, and then little Isabel, who's very delicate and, but you know, a beautiful, beautiful young pairing girl. I was like, what am I meant to do here? Where's the rule book here? I mean, the incredible thing is,
what did you do? Did you tell them?
I was sitting on the sofa in the conservatory, and it was actually quite a beautiful day. And I was sat down and, you know, sort of came in, I'm all hugs and cuddles and, hey, babies, come on in and all of that. And I still didn't know what I was going to do till the second I did it. And I said, listen, I've got some news to tell you. Don't worry about it. You know, I tried to put on a really upbeat voice, even though inside I was completely dying off. I said, look, Daddy's got some news from the doctors today. I was very careful not to say bad news. And they told me that I've got cancer, but don't worry, I'm going to be okay. And the first thing that little Sonny turned around to me and said was, this is the youngest boy, he turned around and said, Daddy, are you going to die? And I said, no, I'm not going to die, I'm going to fight for you guys, that's exactly why I'm going to fight. And he said, well, okay, then can we go to the garden and play a game of football? So it's funny how it kind of, in a way, they deal with it differently. James, the older boy, was more subdued, although... Isabel was inconsolable. The tears were literally rolling down her face. I went over and put my arm around her. She buried her head in, you know, and it was all the things that you might expect. Daddy, I don't want you to lose your hair. Are you going to lose your hair? Daddy, are you going to be better in time for Disney on Ice because I've got a Disney on Ice ticket? And all these seemingly inconsequential little parts of life at the time, when you're doing them, suddenly become mega things and kind of goals on the horizon to reach. And Steve, because I'd have to say something that really struck me, actually. What's incredible, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing or just a human nature thing, because I always put myself in this bracket as well before Thursday. It's incredible. We still can't... People are still terrified of cancer. They really are. I think I've had a lot of people coming around and visiting me, a lot of good friends, a lot of people reaching out to me on social media and stuff. And I think I've heard the word cancer, although I've spoken to maybe 100 people, I think I've heard the word cancer maybe twice. And the word, you know, the big C or C, as people write it in text, about 100 times. Where, people are still scared of the, of even saying it.
Where is your cancer, Paul?
Well, that's... There lies the problem. Everywhere, it's in my blood. It's a Hodgkin's lymphoma. So basically, it's a blood cancer, and there is no straightforward treatment of it. Although there is treatment of it, and often really good outcomes if you really sort of change your life, so to speak, and do the treatments. And you know, there's all holistic therapies and everything now, the controversial, but I think the fantastic, like CBD oil, stuff like that. There are many, many different avenues of it. But yeah, it's very strange to be facing, particularly in a job like mine, which is not that dissimilar to yours, other than the TV element of it. But, you know, you're in a very public job, and a job where you're fixed to be upbeat and entertain people, whether it's through the written word or, you know, coming on your show talking nonsense about showbiz and fighting with people, which I often do and still love to do, and then sort of be confronted with your own mortality at 41 is a very, very strange feeling. And it's made me struggle very much over the last few days.
What does it feel like, Paul?
It feels horrible, Stephen. I mean,
when you're faced with the potential to die at a much younger age than you envisage, what does that feel like?
I was talking to my mum about it yesterday. I said, the really strange thing is, at the minute, and I'm only getting through like a journey of processing this myself, I actually said it. I've got a very good friend called Emma Holohan, who was a former Miss Ireland, and she's really reached out to me the last few months, but particularly over this. And she said to me, I met her up with her on Friday because I'd arranged to take her out for a birthday, and I wanted to just stick to that despite the news and everything. And she sort of, you know, I was sort of saying to her, I said, actually, do you know what? I don't even, this sounds really bad, and I don't want listeners to take this the wrong way. The news is so dramatic, actually, that I don't even really care what happens to me. But I really don't. I've had an amazing life. But as I said to Ema just before I went in actually to meet the consultants when she rang me, I said, I'm not going in that room, even though I am there, you know, more or less on my own, waiting to go in. I said, I'm not going in that room on my own. The problem is I'm going in there with three young children by my side who might not be there physically, but the impact for me is actually the impact on them. And that's where the real quandary lies. So I'm not worried about myself. You know, if somebody says to me, look, Paul, you've got 6 months to live, I'd say, right, fine. What an amazing life. Thank you very much. You know, good night, New York.
And Paul, what have they told you about the potential for cure and the prognosis for it not to go well? What have they said?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, it's the C word. Let's call it what it is for once, guys. It's cancer. You can't predict it either way. It would be wrong for them to say we can cure you of this, but they're hopeful that they can. I have to tell you this, and I would reach out to anybody who's maybe even got an appointment coming up, because I wouldn't want them to be alarmed or scared by this story. The City Hospital were absolutely excellent and so knowledgeable. But when I was sitting in that room, and they were, you know, I'm sitting in the room with a baseball cap on and you know, looking a bit disheveled because I kind of knew what was coming up during the day. And I wasn't really looking forward to it, but I fully expected to be walking out of there, you know, being told, oh, by the way, we picked up something, but we don't think it's really anything. And it could have gone more opposite than that. So they told me that, again, with treatment, it's something that could go away, but there's no guarantees, you know. And so you're living your life basically from that point, literally that second, you're living your life looking into some kind of strange oblivion where you're like, okay, so I still have to go to work, you know, tick. still have to get up in the morning, get dressed, take, you know. Apparently, I'm meant to try and be healthier than ever, so I can't even say curl up in a ball for a few days and not go to the gym. You know, you have to carry on, and that's actually the real admiration I have for people now that are going through cancer. I think it's the third floor at the City Hospital. I walked up there on Thursday. Never been to anywhere like that in my life. And it was absolutely packed. I'm talking about, you know, the way you know, like a train station. They give you a little buzzer that you have to hold in your hand, and it buzzes off when it's your time to be seen by your consultant. It was packed.
And how do they tell you, Paul?
Very casually, which is actually not a bad thing. He said, look, you know, he said, do you know why you're here? And I said, no, I don't. I said, I just got a call from a specialist a couple of days ago saying a scan that I got in the Royal has showed up something on my lung, which I went in just to get double checked. They did a biopsy on it. I said, and they said to go to the City Hall. And I said, to be honest, I have no idea why I'm here. Please enlighten me. And they said, right, okay. So, and they started talking basically what amounts to some kind of foreign language when you get into all the medical lingo, which is fine. But he said, but what it means is basically it's Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's not straightforward to treat you with this, but we're going to have meetings with our top doctors, and we've even emailed the top specialist in the UK in London with your file and your medical condition and your scans, and we're going to try and get a game plan together by today, i.e. Monday or Tuesday, and then we'll see what happens. You know, it could be loads of rounds of chemo. They might go down a different route. I suppose the worst thing that you might hear is that there's no point doing anything. Nobody wants to hear that, and I don't think that will happen. They tell you quite frankly and calculatedly, and, so, and by the way, so they should, because there's another 70 or 80 people sitting there, you know, at various levels of, at various stages of cancer, who they also have to process through the system. But I have to say, the system seems to be working very, very well. There's a lot of help out there for cancer patients. Like, you know, I was in the Royal getting the scans done, but when you walk into the City Hospital, there's like seven or eight different cancer charities operating in their buildings, helping people just even get through something like I got through myself, or tried to get through.
And Paul, I think I said at the top of the show, I've known you for quite a while, and most people in journalism will know of you. You know, you're loud, and you're right, you are irritating. You're Mr. Showbiz, right? Mr. Showbiz. When you get news like that, I'm trying to change my life in that, you know, I plan to go away on holiday now every 3 months. I've just decided, you know what, I'm going to work, and I'm going to die at the end of it, and I need a wee bit of me time. And I guess I'm lucky enough to be able to do that, but that's what I'm going to do, and I'm starting to do it this year. I guess the reason why I'm saying that to you is because when you get news like that, does it make you focus on how you've been living your life, what more you should have done, what less you should have done?
Are you scared of dying? I mean, scared. Like somebody said to you today, you know, you got a year to live. It's a genuine question. It's something I've never asked you. I know you really well. We've talked about loads of stuff, like privately and personally.
Am I scared of dying? I've never thought about it, but I'll tell you what I am. And it's just the age group I'm in, isn't it? You know, I'm 46 in August.
Oh, we're in, yeah.
I guess I'm seeing a lot more people who I went to school with or my social circle getting sick, or some of them dying, and it's making me think. It's making me think big time, because I think up till now you kind of think you're invincible, and then all of a sudden, you know, and you're one of them. You're a friend of mine, and there's Paul Martin now sick, and it's happened, my goodness, over the last year. So am I scared of dying? I don't know, but I'm certainly going to focus a little bit more on life.
That's good at that, isn't he?
Now, what about you? Do, when this happens, does it make you think in your brain, my God, you know, life is finite?
It made me think that I've definitely not lived a small life, which I'm really pleased about. And it all, I'll be totally, totally honest here, you know, not grandstanding or trying to say the right thing or anything like that, being totally honest, you know, let's be honest, when you're touching your own mortality, you kind of do become a bit more honest about things, don't you? It just made me feel like I want to spend every second possible with my children, because that's my life. You know, it really is. That's the only thing that went through my head. But I totally get where you're coming from, saying, you know, Actually, this girl email I was telling you about, she asked me the other day while I was in the hospital, what's Stephen Nolan like? Because I was talking about you because I knew we were going to
No, let's not make this about me, because we're talking about you today.
No, but this is an important thing, so just let me say it. She said, what's he like? And I said, he's the hardest working person that I've ever known, to be brutally honest. So that's true, and I've known you for 20 years. So what I'm saying is, I get where you're coming from having that kind of, you know, you maybe had a few friends with diagnosis, or maybe somebody's passed away, you know, or somebody's ill, and they're your age. That is, you're quite right, it's scary. And your solution to that is, actually, I am working really, really hard. One day there could be a price to pay for this. I was I've had a very, very stressful year at a personal level. There's no cancer runs in my family at all. In my extended family, I can't think of cousins or aunties or older generations who have passed on who have had cancer. And yet Dork, Paul Martin here, manages to get it. And I can only say this is, you know, I don't know why I've got it, but I can tell you something now. I've had an exceptionally stressful year. But really, also, in my 30s, I'm 41 now, in my 30s, I worked so hard to try and get up the tree and get, you know, make a success of myself. My dad always said to me, by the time you're 40, you'll be dead of a heart attack if you keep this up. Well, I'm not dead of a heart attack, so at least that's one meal to me, but I'm still alive and I'm still around. But I get why you say you want to take those holidays and maybe ease off a little bit, because I think there are consequences, and I think your body doesn't forget. I really do. I think your body doesn't forget, because I can't relate this to any, you know, quite a lot of cancer stories I hear, you know, or that ran in the family, or so-and-so's dad had that, and then they have to be so they have to be tested for it and all that. This is completely, this doesn't make any sense to me. I can't relate it to anybody else in my family.
That's all right. You said, Paul, that you've had an incredibly stressful year, and you've been writing a blog.
Yes.
And again, for those people who don't know you, any time anybody would have come across you, you know, you describe yourself as Mr. Showbiz, for goodness sake, right?
And rightly so,
am
I,
yes. All right. And, you know, you like hanging around with celebs, tabloid journalists, all that comes with it, out to all of these parties, all of that kind of stuff. But behind the scenes, in reading your blog, you've been dealing with mental health difficulties.
Yes.
And you've been very open about this. How far back did those difficulties go, and what was happening to you?
Well, oh, gosh, wow. Now, that's probably the toughest battle of all of them, actually, ironically. And again, something that we don't really give enough attention to, particularly, let me rephrase that, it's something that we don't take ownership of as men. On and off, and it has always been on and off, I'd say when I started in the Mirror, I was about 21, and I've never felt stressed by my job or anything like that, but I've always felt disconnected a little bit from the real world, and sort of being sort of functioning in normal ways, you know, always getting, you know, living my life in a way to a certain degree that, and this would be a regret actually now, you're starting to maybe think of things that I would regret. It was also optimistic, but, you know, living my life in a way that was very fast-paced and had no consequences for actions. And basically, as you said, you know, what you would expect of somebody who is silly enough to call themselves Mr. Showbiz, but, you know, that kind of lifestyle, Wolf of Wall Street kind of lifestyle without the millions, unfortunately. But that was definitely, you know, that definitely tapered off when I had children and got married and those kind of things. But
did you have depression, anxiety, or what was it?
No, well, a bit of both, actually, but mainly depression. You know, sometimes you see something, you know, I'm a massive fan of, I really like Ronnie O'Sullivan. I think he's an incredible character. People will be surprised to hear that one of my biggest heroes is a snooker player when I'm meant to be a showbiz writer. But, you know, the amount of times I've sat and watched him being absolutely, you know, genial at the snooker table and, you know, making a 1-4-7 break, sitting down and then walking off halfway through the game because you could just see his head fried and he's like, no, I can't do it. And he just goes off, you know. And some of my biggest heroes have been, you know, people that for some reason or another seem to really struggle mentally. And you see that at all levels of society, don't get me wrong, but I'm talking just about my story here, or my truth is the cool thing to say at the minute. And particularly in our industry, the media and in showbiz, there is a lot of this going on, Stephen. There's a lot of it going on the BBC. There's a lot of it going on UTV. There are people that I know that messaged me last night that I will not name, who, if I, you know, I could tell you their name now and you'd instantly know them. And they said, oh, I've battled with depression and mental illness, particularly when I wrote that article in the Belfast Telegraph when I just became so exasperated that I thought, what could I do? I am absolutely hopeless. What could I do to sort of get this out of my system? But, well, there's one thing I can actually do quite well, guys. It's write. So I just sat down and wrote, and I wrote for myself. I sat down and wrote a piece for myself.
You said, Paul, that there were periods of, I think it was 72 hours, maybe a little bit more, where you didn't speak to any individuals, you had no conversations with anybody.
Yeah.
That, you know, you sat in the house on your own, basically, and you didn't speak to a human being for days on end. Did that happen regularly?
It depends what kind of people you surround yourself with. And at that time, I was in a situation where, I need to put this very delicately, but people are really scared of mental health issues and people are really scared of depression. So you actually end up pretending not to be depressed because you're scared of what the consequence will be if you say, I am having a real wobble here, you know, or I am having a real anxiety attacks here. So you kind of hide it. The media is not exactly a forgiving industry for stuff like that. It's not like you can ring up and say, oh, by the way, I'm really depressed, I won't be in work for 2 months. My experience, and this is only my experience, would be you'd be booted. You know, there's no, you know, care or even real acceptance in the media of it. And there were times when I sat in a, you know, more or less in a bedroom for my own, you know, in a dark room for 72 hours, and I just I literally just wanted to sleep. That was the worst part. And things are a lot better now in that regard, but I literally wanted to sleep all the time because being awake was just an absolute nightmare. I remember waking up in mornings like today, you know, it's a beautiful morning where I am here in Galgorm. I don't know about Belfast, but it's certainly where I'm looking at, it's a beautiful morning. And it'd be a morning like this, and the sun would be coming through the blinds in my bedroom, and I would literally, the second that the sun penetrated the blinds and I knew that it was morning, my stomach would sink and get tied up in knots because I think, oh God, here comes another day. Oh no. Like almost complete panic.
Why?
Just from the sun coming through the blood. Because the day is daytime, and I have, that means that I have to try and function, and I cannot function. You know, that's me putting it very bluntly. You know, very much in the past tense. Go and get, if any men out there or women can remotely relate to what I'm saying to you right now, which is something I've never, it's much easier for me to write than talk about this. So I haven't said anything like this before publicly. If anybody out there is remotely feeling the way that I've described there, and I know there will be not a few, Stephen, I know there will be thousands, but I'm talking to the, you know, the maybe 10 or 20 who will definitely be listening out of that group, who have done nothing about it and think that there's no help, go and see your GP. Today, go in there and lay it all out. Don't leave anything behind. Don't feel apologetic, which I used to, for feeling bad and depressed. Ask them for help. There is great help out there, and there's very fast help out there, and there is amazing medication.
It got to the stage, Paul, when your dad arrived at your door because he was so concerned about you. Can you remember that day?
Oh, gosh, you're going to make me cry, which is a first. Yeah, I do. The room, my wife had gone off to Donegal with the children, and because she was, understandably, I guess, sort of thinking, you know, it's not good for the kids to be around Paul when he's feeling like this. But, you know, actually, at a time like that, you want those people around you. You don't want to be on your own, and yet you do want to be on, you don't need to be on your own, although you want to be on your own. So, yeah, it was basically, as I said a few minutes ago, I'd been lying in a dark room for 3 days and my phone had been ringing, friends, contacts, you know, And my dad, who lives in England, my mum, you know, constantly ringing my phone, and I just wouldn't answer it. I don't know why. I was panic-stricken as soon as I saw their names, you know, coming up on my phone. It's my own dad, for goodness sake, it's ridiculous. And eventually there was this banging at the door, banging at the door, banging at the door, and I pulled myself out of bed. That's what ended the 72 hours, the famous 72 hours. And my dad was at the door, and I was like, oh, hi, Dad. And he goes, so just, you know, you basically cross the ocean to check if I was okay. He goes, here, I get the feeling that things aren't great with you, you know, and we always have this tradition of going out, my dad and I, every time we're together, we always have a tradition of going out to the local curry house, having an Indian, talking nonsense about sport, you know, Chelsea, who I love, cricket, which I love. And that's so, he said, well, get your clothes on, we'll go out for an Indian. And, you know, I was kind of like, oh, gosh, you know, this is a bloody nightmare. My dad's here now, and he's going to see all this. I wasn't pleased to see him, you know, although now in hindsight, I'm so grateful that he did do this. But I went to the Indian restaurant, and, you know, we ordered starters and everything, and we just sat down there, and he goes, so, you know, talk to me and everything. I know the kids and, you know, your wife's away and everything. How are you feeling? And I broke down like a child, like a baby child crying. Like, I've never cried in my life, and I never cried like that before, and never since. I broke down in the middle of a curry house in Palomino.
Why, Paul?
And to be honest, if it, you know, in times gone by, the men in white coats would have been there right then and there and whisked me away. But thankfully, things have progressed since then, because he asked me how I am. And the honest answer was I'm absolutely terrible. It's beyond comprehension. I can't even verbalize it for you, Dad. You know, I just can't see any reason to go on. And, you know, I just literally cried like a baby. I'll never forget that.
So that was a different type of pain or anguish than you'd ever experienced before when your father said to you, how are you?
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? It's in the real, you know, it's in the most real moments in life when we, you know, when we're really put to the test, because that's a question that is more often, I guess, asked than I again would have to hold their hands up and say I'm guilty of it. When you ask somebody how are you, most people don't even stand listen to the response, do they? You know, and certainly I wouldn't have been, if anybody asked me 3 days before that, how are you, Paul? I would have said, well, I'm absolutely crap, thanks. And I wish my life was over. So when you have to answer honestly, because your dad's just flown across an ocean to see you and check if you're okay, you do have to give him, he does deserve an honest answer.
And were you wishing your life was over?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. You know, and this is somebody, by the way, who I don't want to sound, you know, because people sometimes get the impression I'm a bit arrogant and pretentious and all, but it's just because of my job, but I'm not. But, you know, I have everything I've ever wanted. I drive the car that I want, you know, have the houses that I want. I have a great life. I have nothing to complain about in that regard. But, yeah, I just wanted it to be over. I was like, you know, what is the point? This is horrendous. Make this end. Please, you know, put it this way. If it wasn't for the fact that I didn't want to leave a legacy for my children of what is still seen, and let's call a spade, what is still seen as a very shameful and cowardly way to go, which I don't believe that it is, but I do think it's definitely the wrong thing to do. And there are a million things that you could do to get help before you reach that stage, and you should do that. But at that moment, if somebody could have said, okay, see, when you go to sleep tonight, you'll not know anything about it, but you'll not wake up in the morning, I'd have said, thank you, God, yes, please. Yes, please. What, you know, how do I do that? What tablet is it that I have to take? How many of them were? I would have done it. It's an awful thing. People listening to this show, please go and get help, because it does get better. I'm hoping this cancer thing will get better. But really, the emphasis is on you as an individual. I'm very lucky. I've got an amazing family around me. My mum is incredible. My stepdad's incredible. All of that. But really, it's down to you. And that's really tough sometimes if you're not feeling very mentally strong, which at the minute I am.
So what's the turning point? What was the turning point, Paul?
The mental health battle, I'll actually say, Stephen, was far more challenging than so far, you know, how I've had to deal with this, because I was able to deal with this terrible news on Thursday with three young children in a very rational and very positive and constructive and very calm way. And I couldn't have done that then. I couldn't even have made a cup of tea in a positive, calm, rational and constructive way back then. That's how bad it was.
And are you genuinely positive for the future, or are you frightened, Paul?
I'm scared. You know, very scared.
Of what?
But
you're scared of what? Scared of what, Paul?
Funnily enough, after telling you all that, actually, you know, sort of scared of dying, but particularly for my children, you know. They're very, you know, we have such an amazing relationship, and I, you know, anybody would be the same sort of listening to the show now thinking about that. When you think of your children, you know, it kills you. That's the really tough bit.
First of all, thank you for speaking so openly. So you've talked about your own mortality this morning. You've talked about your mental health this morning. And to do so in such an open way, Paul, I'm genuinely deeply grateful for you doing that. I hope that this has helped other people. I can see on the phones this morning people calling us saying that they're in the in a similar situation. I hope you're okay.
Thank you. And, you know, there's a bigger picture than Paul Martin here. If anybody has got anything out of this, that's why I did it. And, you know, all my life, like yourself, I've asked people to talk openly about things that have been very difficult for them, you know, for the benefit of me selling newspapers, if you want to put it brutally, or, you know, keeping my job. And, you know, when you asked me to do this, I thought, well, you know, it's payback time. I have to talk openly about it, you know. It might just help somebody. Yes, it's going to be crushing to talk about. I'd rather curl up in a ball and keep it a secret, but that ain't going to happen for me. It certainly wouldn't happen if it was you, Stephen, even to a larger degree. I'm not going to be able to keep it a secret. So hopefully it's helping. And if there's anybody out there, you know, reach out. Just reach out and get the help.
Final question. If I had have asked you this 2-3 years ago, you know, what's your ambition? I'm guessing you would have told me, to rule the showbiz world, to climb up the greasy pole of a career, to earn more money. Given what's happened to you in life over the last few years, what's your ambition now?
Well, you know me, how ambitious I was career-wise. Now, it's, well, I'm going to give you a really honest answer. My ambition is literally to be able to stand out in a park and run, or, you know, watch my kids play in a year's time. That's as much as I can, you know, even comprehend at the moment. But you know what? That's good enough for me. You know, it's better than chasing money, because I've had that and it hasn't made me happy. It's better than chasing big fancy houses. I've had that and it hasn't made me happy. Just watching my kids joyfully playing around without any of these notions of money and, you know, climbing the greasy pole of me in the media world that we, you know, work in, or any of that, just watching them, perfect. That's perfection for me. You know, that's joy. That is pure and utter joy. So that's my ambition, is just to be able to be around for another year to see that, and hopefully a lot longer, to end it on a high note, hopefully a longer, but that'll do for me. Thank you very much.
Paul, I'm deeply grateful, and I do hope you're okay, sir.
Love you, Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you.